Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Minority Report's podcast and digital series. I'm your host, Mona Shake. You guys, happy Friday, TGIF. It has been a long freaking week, just dragging. Busy, but dragging. I don't know. I'm just, it's been a weird week. I've just been spaced out. I don't know what's wrong with me. I am trying to figure out why that is. I called up my therapist, and I was like, why am I spaced out? What's going on with me? I don't know if you guys are feeling this way, but I know somebody who's not spaced out is my guest today. I hope he's not spaced out because there's only room for one spaced out person, and that's me. But you guys, I'm very excited to have him on. He's a homie. He's a fellow comic. He's an actor. You've seen him on Superior Donuts. He wrote on Hood Adjacent, and I'm just going to let him come and speak for himself. Here's my very talented friend, Rel Battle. How are you?
Hey, what's up? What's up, Mona? You did a lot. You did your research. You went to my Wikipedia page.
You know I did. No, it's not. Dude, I don't do Wikipedia. I do IMDb Pro. There's a reason I put $19.99 a month. That's why I need this.
You did your homework. Appreciate that. How you been?
I'm good. How are you? I like the light. Thank you for putting the light on.
I got my little light set up for you.
I like it, man. How have you been holding up during the pandemic?
I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm doing pretty well. I'm not gonna.
Good for you, man. God bless.
Huh?
I said, God bless. Good for you.
No, I just this isn't far from a comedian's lifestyle. You know, I know people are really suffering and stuff, so I don't want to make light of it. But for a comedian's lifestyle, this isn't that different. Sit around and wait for work. So we're kind of. I feel like I've been trained for it. You know.
Have you been just like doing like I know that you have a show in development at NBC called Uncivil, right? That's what brown kids do. We are taught to do research.
Yeah, I guess I do.
With Pardee Parker, is that his name? Pardee Parker.
Yeah, with the open time, I wanted to make sure that, you know, after the first month of lockdown, I was like, it's going to be for a while. So I wanted to make sure that I didn't spend that time disrespectfully. I wanted to make sure that I took advantage of that time with however long it's going to be to create a project, to write a new project, to learn a skill. And so, you know, we got a chance to just sit and just relax, sit for a while, got to be safe. So. And me and Parter started putting that project together, and here we are.
Good for you, man. I mean, I knew that you were involved with Roast Battle. I didn't quite realize that you were one of the creators of Roast Battle, or you are the creator of Roast Battle. Is it you and Jeff Ross, or how did it go?
Nah, me and Moses created the show. 2013, I forget what year we created the show in the belly room. It was an open mic.
Okay.
And at the end of the open mic, people would just be up there kicking it, like, you know, 50, 60 people. So we made a thing that everybody can kind of come to, because a lot of the comics can't really get on the main stage. So we made it a place where, like, the up-and-coming newer people can kind of rock out. And it became Roast Battle, and it kind of became a thing. And then we had three seasons on Comedy Central, man. It wasn't bad.
That's right. I mean, I loved every single one of them. I mean, my favorite, hands down, was with Ralphie May and Mike Lawrence.
Okay. Yeah, Mike Lawrence he's probably one of the best roast battles I've ever seen.
He's a beast.
Yeah. I would argue he's the Jordan of roast battle to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree. I met him at a random party, and he like was going off about like some nerdy stuff, and I was just like, I lost you, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mike Lawrence not going off on. Yeah, listen. Don't say DC versus Marvel in his presence.
I don't know.
4 hours.
He was just said, is he a DC guy or a Marvel guy?
I don't even know. I don't even want to ask. He's probably both. He equally loves and hates it all.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know what I remember the most is because I did a sketch with Ralphie and Ralphie's wife, the late Ralphie May. And we did this sketch together called Beef in the Middle East, and it's a Muslim and a Jew fight in a ring fight. And we did the sketch, and it was great. We had a great time. But I think what I remember the most from that episode is how pissed Ralphie was with Mike, and because Mike was just coming in, man. He was coming in hard. Yeah.
Mike's a very talented writer, man. He stays with the job too.
Yeah. It was amazing. But like, I want to know. So Roast Battle, is Battle your stage name? Is that why Roast Battle came in, because of your last name?
My real name is Battle. Yeah. It just made sense as the show was going on, just to kind of get some ownership to it. It just makes sense. Just put it together. Real Battle, Roast Battle.
Yeah.
And it just kind of worked. You know, it wasn't much thought to it. It just was there. And then that's what sold the show. Yeah. So I get to keep my name on it.
Pretty much. I love it, man. No, I love all of it. I think I've done the Roast Battle once, and I did it with Dinah Leffert. Do you know who she is?
I know Dinah. Yeah. My Jewish homie.
Your Jewish homie. Exactly. And I did it with Dinah. You know who crashed our roast was the tall basketball player who's friends with Kim Jong-un. Blake Griffin? No, not Blake Griffin, the other guy. Tall basketball player. He's friends with Kim Jong-un. He goes to North Korea a lot. You know what I'm talking about? Huh?
Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman came and just we had just started the jokes, and he just literally came in and just crashed the roast. So Dinah and I ended up just roasting him. It was like the most.
Listen, that beats what you were doing before, right?
Yeah, we were gonna roast each other. We were like, "Fuck it, we'll just roast him. Like, he's here, why not?" But I actually love the concept of roast battle. So wait, what happened? So 3 seasons and that's it? Like, what happened?
Yeah, you know, we did 3 seasons, and you know, it was cool. It wasn't like a super, super, super duper hit. It was more of a. It's more, the energy is more about the live show. You know, whenever you take a underground organic live thing, you kind of have to. You have to use creative license to make it work on TV. Yeah. The pressure, or you got to figure out what this person's thinking, or you got to give the package for this person's point of view, and you know, you got to kind of change a few things to work on TV. So,
yeah,
it's great. You know, it could always come back, but you know, we had it was a fun time. You know, a lot of people got their names built off the shows. It's a lot of people's credits.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful for what it did do. Yeah.
Yeah, you weren't in it. Though, right? You weren't part of it. You were more on the judge side, right?
No, I would judge the live show, and then Comedy Central. No, when Comedy Central bought it, I was out. When Comedy Central bought it, we got our money set up, and I went to New York and started doing live roast battle in New York.
Well, how does it work when Comedy Central comes and buys your show? So do they now own the like IP of it, or do you still own the IP?
No, you sell it. Well, I don't know what everybody else's deal. I know I sold my stake in it.
You sold your stake in
it. I sold it. So what I did was I sold the name and the stake in it. So Comedy Central can do whatever, because they were gonna do whatever they want anyway. And I had already got another TV show at that time. So I couldn't be there anyway. And it was a lot of other stuff, a lot of other pieces moving around. So yeah. I was just like, I'm just gonna do live shows. So I did about 5 or 6 live shows in the country. I had it running at the same time.
Yeah.
While Comedy Central had the show on air on Comedy Central. So it was just trying to, you know, it's how you make about 6 or 7 revenue streams off one idea.
Fuck yeah. You know? I mean, and that's exactly what I was gonna say. I mean, they're doing it across the Atlantic. They're doing it in England, you know, in London it's a big thing. I mean, New York, of course, a big scene. I think Austin they were doing it too, right?
Yeah, they did a lot of the festivals. Austin was in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, Japan too. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I got to fly to a couple of places to do roast battle. It was a lot of fun.
That's amazing, man. I mean, well, I think, you know, you and I have always met around like comedy set, you know, Comedy Store. We always meet each other. But I actually want to ask you. I know you have a twin, right?
Yeah.
Twin brother. Are you who's older?
He's older by 6 minutes.
He's older by 6 minutes. And is he a comic too, or what does he do? Yeah.
No, he does real estate. He's a business guy. You know, he's a money man, man. He likes to get deals done, whatever, investments and stuff. So he's in that lane.
Well, you're a money guy in a way.
Not really. Roast Battle was the first time I had to like do business, but I'm not. We can leave that to my representation, you know. But this was a live show. This was moving. It's a touring show.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of moving parts. So this is the first time I had to learn like how to manage stuff. So. It took me out of a lane I wasn't accustomed to.
Right, because you're an artist, you're a creative, right? So,
nice. You said it. I'll take that.
Yeah, you're an artist. You're creative. I mean, for us, you know, I think a lot of times for us, and I think artists in general, they never really kind of, there's no real education of when it comes to business and money. It's only this creative, or it's, and there's like this this real void in education when it comes to artists, when it comes to like, know your money, like know what, how it works, like know how contracts work, right? It's one thing that your representation is going to come and do, negotiate contracts for you. It's another that you also need to read the freaking contract, know what the hell you're reading, like what kind of money.
I learned a lot about all that.
Yeah, I bet you did. I mean, I've definitely learned a lot, you know, having my show being sold to a production company and like how that deal was negotiated, my lawyer stepping in, and even the contract you signed with your lawyer, you got to sit down and read. You're just like, ah, shit, like I'm not used to this. Right. Like, what is this, you know? But are you from California? I don't even know that.
No, I'm from D.C. originally. So I'm from D.C. and I moved here to do stand-up. So I've been here over a decade, man. I've been here for a while. But everything I do, I kind of bring DC with me. Like Roast Battle is a very DC kind of East Coast element kind of show. So
That's right.
I think everything I do, I try to at least represent.
Why LA? Why not New York? I mean, New York has a way better comedy scene than LA does.
Well, I wasn't a comic really. Like I hosted stuff in college. I was hosting stuff. I was a funny guy. But I don't think I was technically a stand-up. So I didn't know, you know, I had no friends who were stand-ups. I didn't know how to do stand-up. I didn't know go to New York. You know what I mean? I came out here. I hosted a bunch of stuff. And I wanted, you know, my goal was to kind of host like MTV or something. You know, be like, wait. So I came to LA just to be like a host. I didn't know. Maybe like an AJ from 106 in Park or something.
Maybe
do theater. I had no real plan. So, but stand-up, the concept of stand-up was foreign to me. So if I would have known what I know now, I probably would have went to New York. But I was just coming to LA to
be
entertainment and the whole stuff and be creative with that. But I think secretly, you know, acting was more of a thing in my head. But stand-up, I had no concept of it whatsoever.
But what about – so when you were in D.C., were you doing stand-up in D.C. and then moved out to L.A.? Or no, not really?
I would host fashion shows and events. I'd be funny. So I would be doing stand-up, but I didn't – I saw it just being a host.
Got it.
I was the kid at the school that if you got a fashion show or a talent show, whatever somebody needed to host in high school or college, I was the guy they would go to. Host this basketball event for fundraiser, whatever. That was what I would do. But and I would tell jokes on stage, but, you know, I was just messing around.
Were you, like, growing up – like, do you have friends that, like, you grew up with and now they learn that you're a stand-up comic and you do, you know, being a producer or not. They're like, yeah, man, that makes sense. Like, you do that. Yeah, that totally makes sense because you were always the funny guy.
You know, my mom knew. I didn't know. Like I said, I didn't know. My mom, I remember when I moved to L.A., she said, oh, you go on, I did to be a stand-up comedian. And I was like, no, because I wasn't thinking about it at the time. She knew, right? So because I thought everybody was funny. You know, my friends I came up with, they're all hilarious.
Yes.
It's funny. I don't think of it as a I didn't think of it as a profession.
Interesting.
Even though, you know, looking back, I was. Looking back, you know, I won Class Clown. I won Most Humorous High School. I won second place, Biggest Clown. I won all that middle school and summer camp superlatives. Like, I won all the funniest guy stuff, all the awards you can get. But think of it as, oh, you can be a comedian. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm funny. I'm a funny guy.
Right.
But I didn't think that I won everything meant anything. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, if you've been most athletic since seventh grade, you probably should think about pursuing it, maybe. I don't know. But I didn't – stand-up comedy as a profession just wasn't a concept. I don't know if who it's a concept for outside of New York.
Hmm.
I didn't know it was a job you could do.
Right.
Martin Lawrence just showed up and was the funniest guy in the world, you know?
Right. He was just riffing on top of his head. Like it was
I didn't know anybody in the entertainment business. You know, where I come from, everybody gets a job working 9 to 5 and that's it. You know?
What made you as a kid to be like, or I mean, like how young were you how old were you when you were just like, I want to be a performer. Like, I want to be on stage. Like, I want to be like the funny guy. I want to host.
You're going deep. My therapist wants to charge you.
Listen, Rel, this is how I roll, man.
You know what? I don't even. it was never like that. I didn't think about doing stand-up until I did it, you know? I never really planned on that. I wasn't a shy kid growing up. I think that had a lot to do with it. I have a very big family.
A shy kid, or you're not a shy kid?
I'm not. I wasn't. I have 20 uncles and aunts.
Wow.
And so they all have 3+ kids. Huge Southern country ghetto, funny, loving family, right?
Yeah.
My house was the family party house. It was always stuff going on. So you're around your family. It was always somebody in my. It was never just my mom, my dad, my brother. It was always cousins or grandma saying, you know. So it was always music. It was always a party. It was always fighting and arguing. It was always church. I was always, you know, I was always in activities. So I never was a shy kid. So getting up in front of a crowd never bothered me, you know. Mm-hmm. I would get nervous, but I can't remember getting super, like, I never had stage fright. That makes sense? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because you grew up in a big family, so it's kind of like performing in front of a big crowd.
Every day's a party. Every day's an argument. Every day's a dance contest. I was, you know, my mom and dad had me doing sports, so I'm in front of crowds. I'm in the fashion shows. I'm a twin. I'm in the play. Like, I never had stage fright. So that, it was kind of a natural transition, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yes. Because you already grow up in that. So it's not like, my God, now I have to step up in front of all these people. It's like, no, I grew up in front of a bunch of people that are my relatives. Yeah. I mean, did you, like, when you're, so you're like, what? You're growing up and you're not even thinking about being a performer, nothing. It just kind of, you just kind of fall into it when you go to college. I mean, what did you go to school for?
I was going to be a journalist. That was my goal, like I said, to be sway. I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be Harari Choker. I wanted to be Nelson George. I wanted to be these, you know, James Baldwin, these writers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you got to know how to write, like, grammatically. And I was never good at that.
Well, you can always hire people to do that, but it's
you got to get in. So I was a journalist. I would write articles and stuff, and they would clean it up. But it was after a while, it was like, it became a part of journalism is writing stuff that you don't necessarily want to write. So I didn't want to get assignments to stuff that I didn't care for. But writing was something I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so I'm in school, and I was a journalism major for my first year, and I had taken all these credits, and I changed my major, and it was like, oh, well, I got to catch up now. So I couldn't go back and take all the hard. So I said, what's the easiest thing you can take? I said, I don't get shy. I'll do theater. So like, all right, I did a play in middle school. I did a play in elementary school. I just do theater and say lines and be funny on stage, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was 19, and I was in the Clarice Performing Arts Theater School at University of Maryland. And then that was it. Like, once I did that, I was like, okay. So 19 is when I said, okay, this is something I enjoy that I could take somewhere maybe.
Yeah.
That's where the spark of entertainment came from, just the spark.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say that. I don't know if you've seen Disney's new movie, Soul, with Jamie Foxx.
Also, I watched it, yeah.
Man, I watched it I watched it like 3 times because I felt like I missed out on lessons the first and the second time. So I had to go keep watching it. And that's exactly what he talks about. He just talks about finding your spark. So you found your spark.
Right. I think I found my spark. Yeah, yeah. I can say that at 19 at college. Yeah, I bet you can say that.
Yeah. And so did your brother go to the same college as you, or he went somewhere else?
He went to Morehouse in Atlanta, Georgia.
And he went for business. He went for
business administration or something like that.
Isn't that fascinating? Like, you two are, you guys are identical too. You guys are not even fraternal. You guys are identical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating, you know? It's just like, you're just like, oh, well, you're twins. You're identical twins. Like, you know, the odds of your personality matching are pretty freaking high. You're twins.
Well, our majors are different, but I think our personalities are pretty similar. We both enjoy the same music. We both still dress kind of the same. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like, we, even though he's in Georgia and I'm in LA, if a song comes out, we'll both have it playing in our iPod. You know what I'm saying? Our playlists aren't far apart, you know? Our clothing style isn't far apart. I mean, So we do, maybe that's a DC thing too, but we just kind of, our style is very similar in that extent.
Your parents, like, when they learn about you, were they always very supportive of you? You're just like, I found my spark. I want to be like a performer. I want to be on stage. and your parents are like, yeah, go do your thing. Like, right. Or are they in your ear telling you, like, South Asian parents, being a doctor, being an engineer? Like, what is that like?
You know, my mom, I don't like this. My mom, she didn't support it at all. Like, she's going to lie forever and say she did. She did. But I don't take any ill will. Like, I understand, like, on paper, you want to do what? A comedian?
That's
you
know right. What I'm saying?
So my mom has always been a 9-to-5-er. Go to college, get a job, work. That's her thing. D.C., good D.C. job, right? My dad he wanted to go to the NFL. He was a football player. Then he went to the service. Then he was a firefighter. Then he owned a barbershop.
Yeah.
He's a paramedic. Now he's a college professor. So
he's all
skipped around. And so he was like, hey, man, you ain't got no kids. This is what you want to do? Go do it. So he was supportive because he's lived that life. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They're both supportive now. They're both really supportive now. But, you know, it took a couple of TV appearances.
Well, exactly. But I was just going to say that. Parents become believers when they start seeing the money come in and they start right. seeing the credits. And you're like, I believe in you now. You're like, okay, that's cool.
I know, and when you're South Asian, so
yeah,
it's even harder for you. You could have a Grammy. They're like, listen, let's turn that Grammy in and get some money, and you know.
Rel, I could have an Oscar, an Emmy. I could have all of it, and the question my mom would pose is, "Do you have a husband?"
Yeah, that's right.
All it boils down: Do you have a husband, and do you have kids? None of that matters.
You can't marry that Grammy. She's like,
can't marry a Grammy. Can't have no babies with a Grammy. No. Yeah, right. Everything just boils down to that. I mean, I can achieve, like, I think thus far I've done pretty decent for myself. And whenever my mom hears things, she always has to point out which cousin has just got married and which cousin just gave birth to a child. And so all your accomplishments just kind of get diminished. But so is it just two of you, or do you have other siblings too?
I have an older brother, my twin. I have two younger sisters, yeah.
Wow, you guys are a big family like mine.
My dad had a couple of kids. How many of your family?
Five.
What number are you?
Five.
You're the baby?
I'm the baby.
You're the baby girl?
I'm the baby. I'm the baby girl. I'm the only girl. I have four older brothers.
I have four brothers. And you're listen, it's gonna be hard to marry anyway. Like, what's the deal with that?
Listen, Ral, let me tell you, no guy was coming around in that house, tell you that.
Four older brothers.
Yes, four older brothers.
Jesus. Yo.
Yeah.
Why are you a comedian?
Yeah, there you go. There it is, man.
Are you the baby where they treated you like a princess, or they were meaner to you?
Fuck no. Are you fucking no? Fuck no. There was no princessy shit. You were not allowed to be a girl in our house.
Wow. I mean, they weren't used to it. No, in their defense, they didn't know what to do.
The only person who was allowed to be a girl was my mom. Not me. I wasn't allowed to be a girl. Not allowed to be a girl. I'm just one of the boys. I beat the shit out of them. They beat the shit out of me. We toughen each other up.
They protected you.
No, I protected myself because they beat the shit out of me. So I learned how to defend myself. So that's how I did it.
Nothing on bros.
Okay. Listen, I was. It's a true story. I took up boxing for about 7 years. You know.
Oh wow! Would you grow up again?
I grew up in New York. I grew up in New York City.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I moved from Pakistan when I was 15, and then lived in Jersey City briefly. Huh?
You were 15 when you got here.
I was 15 when I got here. Yeah, I'm as immigrant as they come.
Straight to New York too.
Yeah, no. So we landed in good old Jersey City. Don't go to Jersey City. We grew up like, you know, we're like this poor immigrant family. We lived in a one bedroom basement apartment. I slept in the living room. My brother slept in the bedroom.
All the brothers go?
Say that again?
Were all the brothers go? They were adults by them, some of them. Because you were 15. Some of them were adults, right?
Yeah, some of them were adults. Two of them were adults already. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Two of them, almost three of them were adults. So they were, my parents always lived in Pakistan. We always lived here. It was like this strange. Our parents just blocked us from Pakistan, dropped us here, and we're just like, figure it out. Good luck. And then we were like, what could be? American. It was more like an American nightmare at first. So that's what it was.
And you go, I'm going to be a comedian. Wow.
Yeah. Imagine that. No, well, the comedian didn't come in way later. Like, I, just like you, I don't think that you make money doing comedy. That was, like, not a thing, you know? Right. The first time I saw anyone do comedy was, you know, David Letterman on the, like, on the
Really?
Yeah. That was the first time. And I was just like, what is that? Like, what is he doing, you know? Right. And I remember, like, he would tell, you know, because a lot of, when you're new to a country, you don't have a lot of the cultural nuances, so you don't understand the references, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you don't understand the references, you're not going to get the joke, right? So he would tell these amazing monologues, and my brothers would sit there and just laugh their asses off. And I would just look at them, and I'm like, why is that funny? Like, why is that funny, you know? And they'll be like, shh. They're like, you know, just keep quiet, like, stop distracting. And right. So in my head, I was just like, I'm going to find a way to figure this out, why that is funny, you know? Mm-hmm. And then eventually, as you start living and growing.
Letterman was your foray into stand-up.
Letterman was my foray into stand-up, hands down. Yeah. What about you? What about you? Like, who were you watching as a kid where you were like, wow, that guy's amazing?
I mean, you know, Martin was everything, you know, because, you know, Martin, we're from the same neighborhood, like, not neighborhood, county. We're from the same area in a sense, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the Martin references had DC lingo, DC talk, and you know, when his show was on, I was a kid, and that was the biggest show on TV.
Yeah.
So being from, he also from DC, so yeah. You know, he was a god.
That's
so,
right.
So you know, whatever he was, I wanted to be. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
To this day, I've been around Martin a few times. To this day, I can't speak to him. To this day.
Because he's your hero.
I've been in rooms like small as my bedroom with Martin Lawrence.
And you're like, I can't.
Other people, and I've never spoke to him.
Because you get nervous, you get scared? What? No,
he was just that powerful in my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Def Jam, Martin, like home, you know, house party, whatever. He was just like, he's from DC. He's not just from, he's from my hood.
Right.
The rival high schools.
Yeah.
He speaks, he has an accent. Like, I just didn't even like, I couldn't talk to him. You know what I'm saying? So.
Is it also for you, like, don't meet your heroes kind of thing? Don't meet your heroes?
Yes and no, because I've met a lot of my heroes and, you know, I always say that my heroes are dope. The ones I've met.
Who are your heroes, bro?
I've met Will Smith. You know, Will's my guy. I've met like Stevie Wonder. You know what I'm saying? So, people I think are great are dope. I haven't met the asshole heroes yet, but you know. It's still early in my career.
You know what it is, Ral? Like, I'm listening to you, and I'm noticing a pattern of the quality of men that are your heroes, and they are just, like, these really nice, talented family guys who don't, like, fuck around. They're pretty straight-laced, and they, you know, they just live their lives. They're not, like caught up in, like, controversies and shit. They're pretty straight-laced guys. So I'm seeing a pattern here with you, bro.
I mean, you know, listen, I'm a fan of Uncle Luke, too. I like a little, they're not all good, you know, but I've been fortunate enough in my career that I've met some really cool people. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I tend to be attracted to more people doing the more edgy shit. Like, I mean, Chris Rock is like God to me.
Rock's the shit. Yeah, Rock's always been the shit. Yeah.
I mean, like, I remember when Chris Rock was working out his Oscar monologue at the Comedy Store, and I didn't realize I was hanging outside, and I was hanging out with all these New York comics, and I was like, what are you guys doing here? They're like, oh, we're the writing team for Rock's Oscar
speech. Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, no shit. And then he was like, yeah, you want to come in and watch? I was like, yeah. And I remember Chris Rock passing by me, and, like, I couldn't breathe. It was just like this. Oh, like this bigger than God, like larger than life thing. Like, oh my God, this is someone like I so look up to. But I've always noticed this thing about you, Ral, like you are like your comedy's always like just goes right enough at the edge and then it just comes right back. You're not like this comic that's just like, you know, you're not like bitches ain't shit. Like, you're not that guy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I you know, Rock always said, if the joke only makes smart people laugh, it's not that funny. If a smart joke only makes smart people laugh, it's not that funny. Not that smart. I'm fucking it up. If a smart joke only makes smart people laugh, it's not that smart. Okay, something like that.
Interesting.
I think it's important for people to get the message. You know, I think edgy's great. I love being edgy. You know what I'm saying? But I just, when you're edgy outweighs you're funny, you know, and to me it ain't that funny. So, and I don't even really see all this stuff as edgy. I like the same conversations that they talk about on the news, mm-hmm. we should talk about on stage. So if they say rape on the news, if they say molesting, if they see whatever, politics stuff, whatever, if they say these words on the news,
yeah,
be able to say it in our act. And I think it just takes a certain caliber of an artist to make it work where people accept it. So I'm always been a fan of that type of comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think anytime that I watch your comedy, it's very much, you know, having your finger on the pulse about what's happening in pop culture, what's happening in politics. I've always observed and I've always noticed this about you, like you go just right enough and then you just come right back. You're never that guy who's like making, you know, you don't have that Chappelle, you know, sense of humor. You have more of the that Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, that kind of. And Martin Lawrence could be pretty edgy as hell. Yes, pretty edgy. But different kind of, like Chappelle is a different kind of edgy. Rock is a different kind of edgy.
Yeah. Martin was the raw motherfucker you keep talking about. He was wrong.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, right. When you move out from D.C. to L.A., what a fucking culture shock.
Pakistan to fucking Jersey?
But let me tell you something about that. For me, it wasn't even so much about the culture shock of the people, because, look, I had never had Spanish friends before. Never met a Spanish person, but never met a Puerto Rican before. Never met a Dominican before. Don't know what that's like. We do have black people in Pakistan. They're you know, we have a whole bunch of Pakistani black people. That's fact.
Like Africans who were there?
They're Africans who ended up living in Pakistan, but they're Pakistani.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But you're leaving a culture, what's the language called? I'm sorry.
Urdu.
And is it majority Muslim culture?
Majority Muslim culture, yes. Yeah.
To America.
Yes. Yes. And
that had to be a bigger culture shock. They don't speak the language. The language has been, well, there's
Muslim. Oh, no, I spoke the language. We spoke fluent English. Like, we learned 5 languages at the same time growing up.
Really? In Pakistan?
Yeah.
See, yeah. That's how ignorant America is. We know English.
Spanish. We know English good.
You learned 5 languages at once?
5 languages at once, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you just kind of, you know... You know what it is? It's crazy to Americans who are born here, but it's not that crazy to any other part of the world.
That's what I'm saying. That's the testament to how ignorant we are. You know, when you got this much money, you ain't got to learn shit.
Everybody's bound to you, and everybody's just like, we'll just speak one language. It's fine. English works for us. Yeah. No, we spoke. My brothers, so two of my brothers, my second and my third brother were given expired vaccination for polio in the 70s, and they got polio because of it. And that's how we started coming to the U.S.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So our family planned... Say that again?
I thought they were good.
We just, yeah. Yeah, no, it wasn't like that. Like, our family came under very kind of, like, dire circumstances. Like, we didn't really, you know, have other options to get treatments for my brother.
Why America? That's a question I've always had. Why, you know, like, is it the American dream shit, or like, what, like, do people know that a lot of Americans are messed up people who are going to judge you for your race, your color, your creed, your religion?
They don't. Let me tell you something. I'll tell you, for our family, the reason we came is my mom would write letters to hospitals around the world and say, I have 2 sick kids. There's no treatment for them here. I need to get them treated. And finally, my mom's cousin in Boston was like, hey, there's this hospital called Shriners Hospital in Lexington, Kentucky, that takes care of foreign kids for free. Like, they'll treat your children for free. And they were like, really? And they, because their donations are by all these billionaires and millionaires. They cut these big checks, right? And my mom wrote, with the help of her cousin, wrote a letter to Shriners Hospital in Lexington, Kentucky, and said, I have two sick children. They need help. You know, would you take care of them? And they were like, yep, we'll take care of your kids. Just fly yourself out. And that's why we came to the U.S. because my mom's requests got accepted by a hospital in America.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's wild. But they went to Jersey.
Then, yeah. So after my brothers would constantly go back and forth from America to Pakistan. So when they were would come to America and they would speak English, they were speaking with an English American accent. Oh, wow. So then when they would go back, they would speak to us in an American accent. So we're picking up whatever they're speaking to us.
You're learning the language in school and your brothers.
That's correct. But with an American accent.
Yeah, because yours is perfect.
Yeah. I mean, you're like, you know, because you grew up speaking with this accent. Like, I never...
I would have never thought you were born in Pakistan. I thought you were born here.
Really? No. Born and raised in Pakistan, like moving at 15.
Yeah, 15, like that's grown up, damn near. Y'all passed. That's almost an adult.
Like, I really should be talking like this, but I don't, because I grew up with, you know, my brother speaking with an American accent. So, you know.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But to answer your question about, honestly, bro, I didn't know the fucked up history of America until I grew up in America and did research on my own and then started watching the news and be like, yo, they're killing black people for sleeping in their own bed? Like, what the fuck?
You didn't know this in Pakistan?
We don't have none of this information in Pakistan.
It's a weird thing. I always ask people who moved here. It's like, but then, like I'm saying, it's so much good that you sometimes people forget about the bad. So it's a combination. It's like, you can come here, you can make it, but you're gonna deal with bullshit in the process. Yeah. Listen, that's a Faustinian bargain. You go, I'll deal with that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you're in foreign country, like you're in Pakistan, you're like, America is the holy grail, right? It's the American dream. They have everything. If you can make it, you can. Anybody who is willing to work hard, bust their ass, can make it in America, right? But there's no mention of slavery. There is no mentioning of, like, eradicating pretty much the entire population of Native Americans. There's no conversation, right? It's the whitewashed version of what you hear of what America is, you know? But for my mom, you know, it's fascinating. My mom came to Lexington, Kentucky, like the whitest of the white. Like, that's Mitch McConnell white stuff, right?
How they treat her when she came?
My mom has some of the fondest memories in Lexington. Fondest. My mom was like, these pure white people. She doesn't even call them just white. She calls them pure white people. Like, they're the purest of the whitest of the white, right? That's what she considers them. And she's like, I would be praying, because my mom's pretty religious. She would be praying. And she's like, the doctors would be standing at the door waiting till I finish my prayers to talk to
them. That's nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. So my mom's like, this whole thing now that's coming up with these whole fucking crazy people like rioting Capitol Hill and these fucking Trumpers and shit. My mom's like, I don't know this America. I don't know this side of America, because that's not the America I experienced, you know? So it's different for her. But when I went to high school, and I went to an inner city high school. Like, we were these poor, we grew up next to the projects. Like, we were poor, man. We didn't have no money. Like, you know, you come here. And so for me, that was the thing. Because I saw pregnant teenagers in high school, and that's not something you see in high school in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an interesting thing for me. Like, it was, for me, like, because you grew up in such a conservative Muslim household, right? Anything sexual is just like, whoa, we don't talk about it. We don't mention it. You know what I'm saying? Like, did you grow up in like a, was your household kind of, were you like, grew up in a conservative household, or were you like expected to grow up, go to college? Like, did all your siblings go to college? Like, what was that like for you?
It was pretty religious. You know, we were church 4 or 5 days a week sometimes.
4 or 5 days a week.
We stayed in church. You know, my mother's Southern, she's Southern Baptist. So that's, Church is like,
that's everything.
That's like going to my house. Like, that's nothing. So religious upbringing, and you know, mom kept us on point. So, you know, but it was a fun house. You know, we still got, you know, like I said, it's half hood, half religious. So it was a fun house. So, you know, my dad wasn't super religious. So you would see moms with Martin Luther King, dad was Malcolm X. So you would see that dichotomy in the crib. And I think both of those kind of, both of those, I'm a split version of both my parents. You know, you don't really see how your parents influence you until you're like 21, 22.
Right.
And I go, oh, my caring and my compassion is my mom, and my attitude and my not give a fuck kind of demeanor is my dad. So,
yeah,
get them both. So it was religious, but it wasn't too tense. You know, that makes any sense.
But you know what it is, well, like, I'm listening to you. You sound like you come from a pretty healthy environment. Like, you sound like you had a pretty healthy upbringing.
I mean, every African American has a level of PTSD. It's just what level is it?
100%.
My level is one tour of Vietnam. I'm like, I'm not. My level is one tour. I was on the base. Might have saw a little action.
Sure.
And I caught VD from a young lady out in the field, but
Didn't catch an STD. Like, it was an encounter, but didn't catch an STD like that.
But my, you know, it was like I said, it was the regular family bullshit. But like I said, we always had sports. We always had fun. It was always a big party house. So it was always laughing and joking, and and with somebody be fighting downstairs and upstairs be a dance party. So that's why to this day I have to sleep with noise. I gotta sleep with my TV on, my computer, checking my Twitter. Like, I gotta sleep, something's going on. I'm pretty much comfortable everywhere. So
that's interesting you said that. You know, I grew up in a big family, right? Four older brothers, like, plus all these gajillions of cousins from mom's side and dad's side, and big families and big gatherings. And that's interesting you said that. I can never sleep in the quiet. I have a white noise machine. Without that, I cannot fall asleep. I have it on my phone. If I'm traveling, I turn it on. Like, I can't sleep in the quiet. And I wonder if that has something to do with growing up in loud houses.
Could be, man. I truly do. Like, I don't have, like I said, I wasn't nervous. I wasn't ever, I never had stage fright. I'm not afraid of confrontation.
That's just an East Coast thing, though.
You know, that could be. You're right. That could be.
Because I'm not like I've actually, every time I go to New York, my New York friends are like, "Wow, you mellowed out." And I come to LA, and they're like, "You're really intense."
You used to be a fuck. You used to be a yeller. You used to be a.
Yeah, I'm like, motherfucker, what? Like, fucking get into people's faces and shit.
Maybe that's some Jersey shit.
That's some Jersey, New York. I spent like about 2 years in Jersey, but I spent most of my, like, my late teens, all my 20s in New York City. That's where I grew up.
Okay, so you was a New York City girl.
I'm a New York City girl, more than Jersey girl, for sure. Hands down. Do you?
When did you move to New York?
When?
Yeah.
I moved to New York in 1998.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah.
New York for a minute.
Yeah, I was in New York for a minute. So in 1998, and then I left in about 2010, 2011. What are you doing?
I was charging my computer.
I see.
I'm gonna cut off on you.
Do you miss, like, I don't know, Rel, you know, a lot of times people talk about, like, stand-up comedians come from, like, traumatized backgrounds. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of suffering. But I'm listening to you, and you sound like you come, you know, everybody has their level of family bullshit. And, you know, with you, that's the additional, every black family has an additional added fucking PTSD and, you know, constant fear of not getting shot when you step outside your house. Right. Besides that, do you feel like pain plays some kind of role in your comedy? Like, does pain contribute in some way? Does that drive your artistry in any way?
I think pain plays a role in every area of art. For me, not necessarily. I look at it more as I feel more like a reporter. You know, I like to report comedically on the trauma that I see around. You know, I have, you know, like, even though I might have had a decent enough upbringing, my friends and other family members, and we have plenty of stories. Like, my core family, my mother, my father, my brother, we're the best off out of my entire family. It's some wild, like, every family, some wild shit, but we had a pretty good base. And when I say that, My dad was the first to go to college. My mom was the first to go to college. So economically, we were already going to be probably a little bit better. We were still in the hood, but we had that base of education. My dad could hustle and get work. My mom could hustle and get work.
Yes.
But my surroundings didn't reflect that. So even in my act today, I don't do a lot of family jokes, you know. But my neighborhood influenced me, where it's D.C. is a very topical current event, what's going on in the city. And so I just I reflected on that. I more or less take my experiences I've seen and I put it through my comedy. My personal life was pretty subtle. There was never a point where I didn't know my mom didn't love me. Even if I couldn't stand her ass or she couldn't stand me, I knew my mother gave a damn about me and was going to do whatever she could to provide. So I had that base of there is love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so my personal pain, I don't think really come. Maybe was an actor, but stand up, not really, man. I'd rather have, I don't know. It just, that's just not how I think.
Yeah, yeah. But it also sounds like, you grew up in a household where it wasn't this thing where you're like, I don't know if I'm going to get love, so I got to go out and find it. Like you were, had it at home.
I was trying to go away from my family. I was like, I was trying to get the fuck out. Like it was too much. You know what I'm saying?
So, right.
You know, as a 13-year-old, a nagging ass mother is annoying. But you look back, no, she just didn't want you to be out and get shot because you can get killed. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. So me pushing away from my mom is because I don't know. Your family's probably the same way. We don't do locked doors in this house. We don't do closed doors in this house.
No, we close doors, bro.
Yeah, we don't close doors. Don't close doors. I always want to know what's going on in the house. So where you at? You in the basement? Where you at? You know?
Yeah. So, I never had my own room, Raul, so I wouldn't know. I never.
Four brothers, you never had your own room?
Never had my own room.
Christ. You must be able to deal with some smells.
You don't even understand, Raul. Like,
four men?
Gross. Growing men.
Growing men. So you must know how to deal with some stank.
I do. Usually this mask that we're wearing now, I'm used to it. I fucking, that's how I survived those days, like growing up with brothers.
I feel so sorry. You're the only girl, so.
It was painful, man. A lot of times people listen to me and they're like, you must have been the princess. Princess? We don't do princess in our.
But I would assume your dad and mom would make sure they take care of you because you're the baby.
No, I mean, our family is, our family dynamic is very, very strange. Well, like this thing you talk about, like having love at home and knowing that there's love at home. We never had that. We had everything but that.
I've heard you act. I know you. I know.
We had everything. We had money, beauty. My mom's beautiful. My dad had money. We lived in a nice house. We had all that. But there's just like these two people that came together that don't love each other. Like they're just there because of circumstances.
Was it arranged or was it?
Yeah, it was an arranged marriage. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's no real love per se. Like you can say that they maybe love but in their own way. Huh?
They were together for a while, huh?
They were together till my father passed away, like 15 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And they just made it work.
Yeah, you just shut the fuck up and you just do whatever to make it work, right?
How's it gonna work? Like, hey. I'm you're gonna show up on Thursday. That's gonna be your wife. Like, how did it work?
I think for my mom, I asked my mom, I was like, did you meet dad before you got married? And she was like, I saw him once in passing.
Like, did she speak to him when she saw him?
I think she saw him and she was like, they were like, hey, this dude is like interested. And she was just like, cool, gonna go make dinner for the family. Like, that was it. Like, that was the entire interaction.
So their wedding day is when she met him.
That's correct.
So the first time she kissed him was the first time she ever.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they get along most of the time?
I think my parents should have never gotten married. They should have just never gotten together. They were just very different people. Right. But, you know, they got married because, you know, my mom was really beautiful. She was getting all these marriage proposals and my grandmother got scared and she was like, oh, my God, like some guy's going to try to like fucking kidnap her or try to take, you know, let's just get her married off. And my father's side of the family was
somebody would take her because she's pretty.
Somebody's going to come and take her because she's pretty. Yeah. Yeah. There were a lot of dudes that were stalking my mom to school.
So you had a, so you marry him off, the guys would back off.
Precisely.
Interesting. How old was your mom?
My mom was 17.
Damn. How old was your dad?
My dad was 22.
Okay, at least he wasn't some old geezer.
No, no, he wasn't some old. So my grandmother, my dad's mom, wanted my mom to marry her, my uncle, my dad's older brother, but he was too old for her. And they were like, no, fuck that. He's too old. And they were like, well, what about this guy? So, and my dad was very handsome. My dad's a very handsome guy.
Denise was a guy around her age.
Who yes.
It could have been some, you know, I don't creepy know. How
oh, no. I've seen like people get married to some like creepy ass dudes, like for sure, because they're just like, oh my God, he has money. Like, just fucking marry the daughter off.
Your dad saw her and said she's pretty. I like that. Like, is there an agree? Like, does he have to agree, or is just. Does your mom have to say yes, or you got
to
do it?
No, no, you have to. You both have to agree. Like, both sides have to agree.
Okay, so she approved of the marriage.
Yeah, I mean, you approve of because, you know, there's all this fucking pressure. Like, you have to say yes.
If she would have been adamant, it wouldn't have happened.
If she was adamant, she probably would have gotten her ass kicked by her mom and her dad to say yes, you know? It's like there's all this familial, like, cultural pressure of, like, saying yes.
So it was, but it's still, she was okay with the, it wasn't like she was like kicking and screaming. She's like, if I got to do it, I'm okay with that.
That's right, right. My mom was like, I'm okay with that. I've seen him. He's handsome. He's like, she's cool. Like, I'll, you know, I'll get married to him. But I think my parents in the beginning, you know, and also, Ralph, like, did you guys grow up with like your cousins next door to you guys? Like your grandmother living?
I'm all into your shit. Like, so what happened?
Ralph, you bring me on your podcast and then you ask me those questions, Ralph.
No, my mother moved. I was born in North Carolina. My mother, we lived there for 6 months. My mom moved to D.C. Okay. And she had her sisters living in D.C. already. So okay. We bounced around different houses the first couple of years of my life. And so, yeah, I always had cousins this part of D.C., Southeast, this part of Maryland, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was always people, you know, we ain't next door, but, you know, 15, 20 minutes away.
Yeah. Okay. But you got, just like you said family was always around. You grew up in a house.
A cousin got kicked out of his house. He's staying. A cousin got out of jail. He's staying. My aunt, her boyfriend and her beefing, so she over the house for 6 months. You know what I mean? It was always people at the crib.
Wow. See, for us, it was like that too. But I think my mom got real slick. And what she did is she picked up the family and moved us away, like an hour away from everybody else.
That's
she
was smart.
Like, she was like, try coming and crashing here. You ain't going to be able to crash here. It's going to take you an hour to get here.
Kids, we got no room.
Right. There's no room, like five kids. That's a lot of. My mom was, was your mom like super strict about like education? Like, do your homework. Like, you're getting your ass whooped by, like, my mom used to beat the shit out of us with a rubber pipe. What about yours?
Oh, man, we got hit with the 2x4. You remember when you couldn't lock the basement door, you put that wood piece?
Yes.
Black and brown people get beat up a lot.
That's why we don't shoot up the schools. That's why.
She was smart because my father was smart. My father made us fall in love with sports at like 5 years old, right?
Mm.
Basketball, we love sport. Like, we were just obsessed with sports. So that was the deterrent. So if you don't do this, you can't play on your little league team. You don't do this. So my fear of not playing on my team or not being there for my teammates and not being with my friends was the biggest fear in the world. So I had grades. My grades were good because of that. So it got to the point where not only did I have to have good grades, I had to be on the honor roll. So I had to get. So my brother and I had to have 3.0s just to play sports, which is crazy because most people, if your kids are good at sports, whatever. But no, we had to get so that. So by the time I looked up and I was graduating high school, I had this great GPA without even trying because it was like, I want to play. You know what I'm saying? So he kind of tricked us into being slightly academic.
Yes. Yes. Are your other siblings like all like college grads and very.
I'm the least educated of all my family.
You're educated. You went to college.
My mom had, that's it though. My mom has 4 degrees.
Wow.
My dad has 3. He's a professor. My little sister's like a graduate doctorate or something.
Wow.
My other little sisters.
Did you just say graduate doctorate or something? Is that what you just said?
I don't even know what they do, man. Education doctorate, grad. I don't know. I don't even know. I tell dick jokes, so I'm the least educated in my family.
Listen, man, welcome to the club. That's exactly what I do, too. At least you went to college. I didn't even go to college. We were too poor to go to college.
Look, what I do now, I didn't have to go. No, right? You know.
What, what am I going to go to college and waste my money for? For what? There ain't no comedy school.
Right, exactly.
There's no freaking comedy school you're going to. Man, yeah. You know, who would you say you have a better relationship with? Like, your mom or your dad?
Man, I would say it depends. I love them both. My mom, I can't talk to as much because it's a lot. She's a lot.
Explain that to me. I hear guys say that. She's a lot. What does that mean? And you're talking about your mom. So I really want to know
this. Men are simple. Who, what, when, where, how, right?
That's not true, Raul. That is not true at all.
Men are simple. Well, men in my experience are pretty simple, right? Not men in all the world, just me and the guys out my community, how we grew up. My mother is a fucking movie diatribe of conversation about this did this, this is how I feel. You gotta understand, this is what the sun was doing today. And the sun was beaming on me, so I was getting upset because I was sweating and in my hormones. And so my mother is a whole, I'm like, just get to what happened, you know? So your mother's probably the same way. I got one of those moms who could turn a hello into a 3-hour conversation about her neighbor's grass. So she's a lot. She's a lot. My dad's like, what's up? My dad, 3 minutes, what's up? How you doing? Eat right? You good? How you still looking? You okay? Your life's good? Okay. You healthy? How them gals? All right, put a condom on. All right, I gotta go. Bye.
That's it. Yes. Did your dad have the conversation, the birds and the bees conversation with you, or was it like your parents, like, or was that just kind of understood?
My dad was cutting the grass one day. He had on a purple tank top. I remember like it was yesterday. A purple tank top.
How old are you at this point?
13, maybe 12, 13. Okay. Granted, I already had sex ed class. He doesn't know this though.
Well, you had already gotten laid by then.
No, I ain't got laid, but I knew about the birds and the bees.
Got it.
Mom yells outside, William Carr, teach these boys about sex. And he says, shit. He cussed the lawnmower off. I remember this clearly.
Wow.
He comes in sweaty. He had on sweatpants and a red tank top. He was a cube. He had the cow brand. And it's me and my brother. Like I said, people always stay. And my cousin Tony was there. He was like 2 years older. He sits us in the kitchen. He said, look, man, it's a banana. It's a condom. You put the condom on your dick. I go outside and play. And that was my conversation.
What?
But I ain't got no kids. Neither is my brother.
Listen, high five, Raul. Okay. Come on. Virtual high five. All right.
True to God story.
Wow. Did he have the same kind of a conversation with your brother? Because you have an older brother.
My oldest brother is from a different woman. So I don't know. What they did, but that's just how my brother and my cousin, how we did it.
Wow. My mom's sex conversation was this. Don't go near the boys. That's it.
Okay.
That's it.
You get what that means.
I don't know what that means. I was like, I play with boys because I'm a fucking tomboy. I think I am one of the boys. What the hell are you talking about? Don't go near the boys.
Says the woman who got married at 17, judging you.
Right? Listen, I'm just like telling me what to do with my, like, seriously. No, my mom.
If you had stayed there, would you have gotten married at that young too?
Yes, absolutely.
Is that normal now? Like to 2020, women, your girls get married at 17?
Yeah, maybe not so. Look, I have, in all honesty, I haven't been to Pakistan since 2006, since my father passed away. I just got so traumatized the last time I went that I just didn't go back. It just really fucked up my head. So that I just didn't go back. But, I think more and more, because there are now more and more women are joining the workforce.
Okay.
They don't really have that kind of financial reliance on a man where they're just like, oh, I got to marry so I can get financial support. More and more women are working. They're going to colleges. They're going to universities. So the age is increasing, right? Divorce rate is skyrocketing in Pakistan.
People are getting our arranged marriage still normal?
Sometimes, I mean, I think if you go more to the rural parts, yeah, maybe even in certain urban areas, you'll see that. But more and more, it's more about, look, people are dating. They're on fucking dating apps. Like, that wasn't a thing. Yeah, that wasn't a thing when I was growing up.
Huh?
Listen, they're trying to do good. Vitamin D, man. We all need that vitamin D. So they're just trying to get on that.
Good. You know? Good.
Yeah, they're trying to get on that. But yeah, I think if I had, when I was moving to the U.S., I remember this. My mom's third cousin or fourth cousin, they're like, my mom's really good friends with her. She has five sons. She had her five kids at the same time we all five were born. So in essence, I grew up with nine brothers.
Jesus. Where are the girls? You had no girls?
We had no girls in the family.
You're lucky because your family couldn't afford all those dowries.
No, exactly. I mean, they could because my dad's side of the family is rich. But oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, that's a lot of – but my dad's brothers, they all had daughters, like tons of daughters. So my father – huh?
So they got – so they getting – okay, they getting paid.
The
daughter's family. Right?
Yeah, the daughter side of the family is giving the dowry. So, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, they were eating meat once a week because they had to save up money for the dowry.
Wow.
Yeah, but for me, it wasn't like that. You know, I grew up with a lot of boys. And I remember it's very strange, Raul, because one minute you're a distant cousin, next minute they're trying to propose marriage to you. So you're just like,
That's how it works.
Cousin fucking is big with us. Big. We're big on cousin fucking.
First cousin fucking or like second cousin?
First cousin fucking.
Your mother's sister's son type
That's
shit.
Right. That's right. Yeah, it's going down. It's going down.
It has like almost a billion people, right?
No, India is, you know.
It's 2 billion. Isn't the Pakistan like 800 million or something?
But Pakistan has a very big population. It's pretty high up there. I think it's like upwards of it's like more than $330 million. $330 million. Yeah.
With 30 in America, it's plenty of people to fuck.
That's right. And you have to think about the geography. So Pakistan is, I believe, smaller than the state of New York.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And so all these people are like jam packed. So Bombay is the most densely populated city in the world, and the Karachi, which is where I come from, is the second most densely populated city in the world. So,
and how many religious factions are there? Factions are there?
I mean, in India, there's a lot more because India.
But in Pakistan, is it a lot?
Predominantly Muslim, followed by a handful of Christians, handful of Hindus. We had a few Jews.
Would that affect marriage?
Huh?
Would that affect marriage?
You mean like doing like inter-religion marriages? Yeah, that's not really a thing.
Okay. So yeah, I guess you got, this is limited there. You can only date most. Yeah, I guess that makes sense now.
Dude, they have so much beef. Like, we can have beef because we're Muslim and not Hindu. But they have so much beef. Like, if you're Sunni, which is what my family is, which is what majority of the Muslims in the world are.
Well, Shiites, right?
If you try to marry a Shiite, it's like frowned upon. It's like, yo, what are you doing?
I know in the Middle East, but Pakistan as well.
Pakistan as well. It's the same thing.
Could you marry a
Christian? Huh?
Did you marry a Christian?
I was married to a Greek Orthodox.
You were married?
Yeah.
I got to have a podcast to bring you on. I got to hear about this. Another time. I didn't know that. I didn't know you were married at all.
Yeah, I was married. I got married very young. I met him at 18.
Might as well stay in Pakistan.
But you know, but he was handsome, so I can't take that away. I couldn't have found him in Pakistan.
Come to the States and get married 3 years later anyway.
But I didn't get married at 18. I met him at 18. I got married at 22.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got married at 22, got divorced at 27. So yeah.
You got married because of the pressure culturally to get married, or because you wanted to get married?
Bro. We need another 2 hours for that.
No, listen, we can go in.
I feel like this is turning more into the Rel interviewing Mona versus Mona interviewing Rel.
That's always weird talking about yourself.
Huh? It's always what?
Weird talking about yourself.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, you know, my life story is so complex. Like, my upbringing is so complex. Like, I've already lived like four lives already. I think I must be on my fifth life right now because I've just lived so many lives. You know, I'm listening to you and I'm just like, man, it would have been nice to grow up in like Rel's household. Like, it just sounds way more nicer and stable.
You think that. No.
I don't know, Raul. No matter what you say, as long as there is love,
right,
it's all going to be fine. You still work it out.
There was always love, and I realized as you get older, you realize it. Younger, you like annoyed and pestered and just mad and angry and a kid and whatever. Yes. And you get older, you go, oh shit, yeah. This is why she didn't let me go to those parties at 10 at night. This is why she made me go to bed. This is why I had kids on Sunday. Yeah. This is why I couldn't hang out with these my friends. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You don't realize it until later. Like, oh, yeah, that's because she didn't want me to die. It was very easy to die in D.C. back in the 90s. Yeah.
That's right. I think it still is, Raul. I don't know if you heard about the Capitol riots.
Right. They're not going to my neighborhood. That's the whole, you know.
What was the name of your neighborhood? Like, what is that area called where you grew up?
It's called Northwest, and I grew up in PG County. So it's like say the riots and stuff is going on in Manhattan, but you live in the Bronx. Like you're in Brooklyn.
That's right. Okay.
Like, you're in East New York.
That makes sense. That makes total sense. Yeah, I mean I lived in New York and then I moved to Brooklyn. Yeah, my family, my life story is so complex. Like, it's just, I know, like, I look like I'm pretty stable. I try to be. But yeah, it's a lot of drama. It's a lot of, I'm a product of chaos. There's a lot of chaos, you know.
You're a comedian now.
Huh?
That's why you're a comedian now.
That's why I'm a comedian now. You know, it's hard, man. It's hard to, like, you know, it's like sometimes like your brain has this fascinating thing it does that it stashes away things just to protect itself.
Things happen or
what was that?
You try to forget these things happen or what?
Yeah, you try to like stash it away because it's too traumatic. It's too much trauma in your brain and your brain can't process it all. So you just stash it away and then you start going to therapy sessions and the fucking shit starts coming up and you're like, oh God, yeah. Yeah, that happened, and like that happened, and like that, and I think that's what kind of fucked me up this week. I don't know if you know what EMDR therapy is. Do you know what that is? EMDR, yeah, EMDR therapy is specially dedicated for people who've experienced a lot of trauma in their lives. So what they make you do, it's like a random eye movement processing. So they make you revisit the trauma, right, and rewire the trauma by tapping on your body. It's fascinating. It's fucking fascinating.
Your therapist gets you there to get you remembering things.
Yes.
And then you can go, so you suppressed a lot of the shit, like, oh yeah, that did happen. Like you suppressed it and it affects you.
Yeah, you just stash it away. But then as you go along in your life, you're just like, I don't know why I'm pissed off all the time. I have no idea why I'm angry all the time. I don't know what's wrong. And then you go back and you're just like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. That happened, and that happened. You're like, oh.
Forgotten memories
cause
you to act a certain way now.
That's correct. Because it has a huge influence on how you behave and how your personalities form, or how you even look at the world, how you get irritated by things where you don't understand. You're like, I don't understand why I'm irritated by this. I don't understand why this person bothers me. And then you're like, this person reminds you of this fucking piece of shit you had in your life, and that's why it bothers you.
You think therapy should be like a mandatory thing in school?
Hands down.
Like gym. Everybody should take therapy like gym.
Everybody should meditate like gym. We should have meditate. We should not have detention centers. We should not have like detention rooms. We should have meditation rooms. You need a timeout, you're going to go and meditate. You're going to go and meditate for 30 minutes. You're going to go meditate for an hour. And by the way, they did that in like a middle school. I forget where they did it. I think it was DC. I think they did it. Or if I'm not mistaken. And they found out that kids, like, they stopped misbehaving. Their grades skyrocketed. Like, everything improved because they started meditating.
Right.
It's fascinating. I mean, do you go to therapy? Have you ever been to therapy, bro?
No, but I've had a lot of women in my life put me through with self-prescribed therapy. So a lot of them have tried to fix me, trust me.
They try to fix you?
Or they try to give me therapy. So no, I've never clinically,
what?
No.
Why are they trying to get you therapy, Ral?
Because I, you know, I'm, you know, I think we all have our traumas. Mona, you know, I have my things. I'm,
What are your things, Ral?
Oh, it's all in the conversation. Time is it? How long is the show? I'm just a very, you know, I'm a very focused person, man. You know, I'm very, you know, laser focused on stuff, and a lot of my emotions can be tampered down for things because I'm just about getting the job done. So I'm not a super emotional person, you know. And you know, I've been told I would treat getting into a car accident and winning $1 million with the same response, like, oh, that's what's up. You know what I'm saying? I'm only really animated on stage, I think, and so people don't really. Women always want to know what I'm thinking or whatever. So I'm just a very calm person. I'm very relaxed. I try to be relaxed. I try to avoid as much trauma as possible. And so that could be a result of having a very dramatic family. And I'm trying to be who knows?
I see what you're saying. Like, you went in the opposite direction where you're just like minimal, don't need to be so extra.
Yeah.
Keep it down, minimal reaction. We don't need to like be so expressive. Yeah. It's fine.
I think that might be the call. And so sometimes when you don't kind of show reaction, people feel like that means you don't care.
Yeah.
And so I don't know.
And so you have a hard time like expressing your feelings.
Conversations all day. We can express through conversations all day, but I'm not super like
lovey-dovey, like affectionate, like physically affectionate.
I'm not super passionate about things necessarily that aren't arguments about sports. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a very even-keeled person.
Yes. No, I've noticed that.
I think.
Yeah. But I think it's different in relationships, right? Like when you date people, you really get to learn the other person as to what makes them tick, what doesn't. So it sounds like, by the way, what is this thing? I swear to God, Rel, never have I ever in my life, even when I was married, once looked at the person I'm with and was just like, what are you thinking? I've never done that. Is that weird? Is that because I grew up with boys? What is that?
Yeah, maybe because you grew up with boys. I've learned, you know, and I'm only speaking of women in my life, that, you know, there's a constant need to, women don't want to be hurt. They don't be caught off guard. A lot of times they want to know how you feel at all times in case something's not working. You know, people feel the need to want to fix things. So I understand that. We want to know what your partner's thinking a lot of times. And if you have a guy who's very stone-faced and very even-keeled and doesn't express himself, that's why you ask that question. To go, do you completely hate me right now? Are you not in love with me? Are you happy? And so that's why that question comes up, you know?
Well, Andre's like, you date uninteresting men, LOL. No, I date pretty interesting men. They just tend to be pretty much like my dad, emotionally unavailable.
Don't they say that women date their dads?
Women do tend to date their dad, but you end up usually with the kind of person that whichever parent you didn't have the best relationship with, that's the person you end up with, that personality. Because you're trying to repair it. You're trying to subconsciously fix that relationship.
What? Huh? So.
The joys of going to therapy, Ralph. The joys of going to therapy.
Date are a reflection of the parent you didn't have a good relationship with.
That is correct.
What if you only had a one parent?
Well, then it's going to be, if you're a girl that didn't grow up with a dad, then you're going to probably more than likely go after men who are not really there for you and who probably abandon you.
So if you had a dramatic mother, you want a dramatic girlfriend. Or
you're attracted to it, it's familiar. So it's
familiarity. Now that makes sense. It's familiar.
Yes, you know? That's correct. That's what you're looking. So if you had a very overdramatic mother, then you're also somehow subconsciously, not even consciously, subconsciously attracted to women that bring a lot of drama because you grew up in that. That's familiar. That's, you know, that's something that you're excited. I mean, if you go out, if you meet a girl who's like kind of even keel, you're not gonna probably not find her that attractive.
Right. Interesting.
Is that the case for you?
I don't know. I don't know. It's weird. The girls I've loved the most have been more even keeled.
Okay.
And so, but I've dated dramatic. But I don't know. I don't know. I listen. I've been taking therapy. I don't know what, you know. I've dated all types of weirdos and cool people. So,
yeah. You know. Yeah. I mean, you're just trying to repair that broken relationship. That's what you're. I mean, after 13 years of therapy, Ronald, that's the absolute conclusion that I've reached, which is that I'm consistently trying to repair my relationship with my dad. Like, I'm constantly going out with these dudes that are just not good for me. They're just not good for me. And I also ended up marrying a person like that. He, you know,
like your dad.
Very similar to my dad. Very.
Were you and your dad cool when he was alive?
Not really. Okay. A month before my father passed away, we finally made peace, and then he passed away a month later. So yeah.
Made peace. That's good, right?
Yeah, I made peace, but you have to also understand that, like, psychologically, whatever, like, that broken thing is with my dad, I think I've been trying to fix it for the longest time. You know what I'm saying? Because for you, it sounds like you go out with the even keel women, but maybe those relationships fizzle out or you get bored because you're just like, cool. Or they're trying to fix something about you. Like, wasn't your mom always trying to protect you and, like, fix things and tell you what to do?
I mean, you know, she was a mom, you know, she was 21 and had twin boys. I mean,
right.
What mom isn't super protective over that, you know?
Sure. No, I feel like, I mean, honestly, also, Rel, in the industry that we're in, it's hard. It is fucking hard to find a good, solid partner. It's hard. Mm-hmm. In the business we're in, like, people are looking for the next best thing. They're ambitious. They're, like, looking to do whatever it takes to get to the next level. It's hard to find someone who is compatible. It's hard.
I find myself not dating a lot of people in the industry. I date a lot of civilians.
That's right. Which is a smart way to do it.
Yeah. Then again, I'm, you know, I ain't married. So maybe that's not working.
I mean, look, you know, so what? You're not married. So what? I mean, I was married. I'm divorced. So what? What does that mean?
I'm joking, but I don't really. I don't know. I just never. Marriage wasn't something that I needed to do, and clearly you either, right? It was just like, right. if it happens, awesome. But I don't have need cultural need to, you know. Our moms would want us to, but
yeah, of course. So your brother's not married. Doesn't have a girlfriend.
Married. All of my five. None of us are married.
Really?
Yeah.
Kids? Does anybody have kids?
My oldest brother has a son.
None of you guys are married.
None of us are married. And none of us have kids but my older brother. I'm what you call a pull-out method specialist. So I don't have any babies. So
wow.
My oldest has a baby though. So
how interesting.
That could be because of my dad. I think that's because of my dad.
You know, what about the pull up?
About just children, like, you know, kids. It's like, well, we're good, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. But then again, we're all like entrepreneurs. So we're all busy workers, man. So it's like, it just, that never really, I don't think that comes, that phases us too much. You know?
Well, it's interesting. You said that all of us are entrepreneurs too, right? My four older brothers, they all work for themselves, right? They're all
culturally, family, children having, being married was a thing growing up. I'm correct, right?
Yes. Getting married, having children is like, look, I'm supposed to be married and have at least two kids by now.
Right? Yeah. Instead, I'm
slinging dick jokes on stage in LA living alone with a dog.
Right. I never remember my mom or dad talking about, you got to get married when you get older. That was never really brought up.
Really? Interesting. Never. What about your sister? Was that for your sister though, or no?
No, it was never. I never recall mentioning marriage and kids. I always recall getting a good job, going to college. Education was always big. But marriage was never, you know, and I truly think that has something to do with it, you know, but we all, from my honest, we're all pretty happy that I think, you know, from what I know, we're all doing what we love to do. You know?
Yeah, that's interesting. My three of my brothers are married. I was married. I'm divorced. And My middle brother, my third oldest brother, he really has, he's not, I don't know if he'll ever get married. I think he's just too traumatized by seeing, like, divorces and, like, marriages around him. And he's like, it's too much. It's interesting, Raul, you said that. You know, I think it also has to do with how you're raised. Like, if that was never a thing that was encouraged, then so then you're just like, it's not. If it happens, great. If it doesn't, then it doesn't. Like, whatever.
Never a priority. It was never a priority. It was education was a priority. Going to school. College wasn't an option. And we all went to college. And then my sisters, they went further and got their doctorate or whatever the hell they got. You know what I'm saying? So college was always a thing I always heard growing up. Going to college.
Right.
I never even saw high school. Wasn't even like graduating high school. Like, all right, whatever. I still got 4 more years. You know what I mean? Like, it was never, are we going to go to school?
Yeah.
I just saw it as you have 16 years of school, period.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Were you guys, like, when you guys were kids, would you ever, like, sit around the dinner table and be like, when I have kids, was never. That ever a thing?
Never. It was always money and get money and being successful. It was never, you know, never.
Yeah. You know? It was never about that. How interesting. I think for my mom now, she's kind of reached this point where she's just like, just be happy. She's just like, just be happy. If you can find someone, great, just be happy. You know,
she gave her entire life to being in something that she might not have really wanted to be in and raised her beautiful kids.
That's right.
She looked back like, was it worth it? I'm sure it was, but it's like, damn, like, my life is you guys.
That's right. I think my mom actually wanted to be an artist. My mom wanted to be a radio host. That's what she wanted to be.
Interesting.
Yeah, and my grandmother crushed those dreams real fast. She was like, radio, what? No, you're getting married and having kids. Is what
you and your mom close?
Huh?
You and your mom close?
No.
Okay. All right.
my mom is a very, so my parents are like very interesting people, right? They're very, very smart, very ambitious, making money, right? Doing these extraordinary things. Like, my mom is the reason we're the first family from our mom or dad's side to come to America. Like, that was unheard of. It was unheard of to come to America. That's not something you did. Like, my mom was 23 or 24. I was her fifth child. I was 6 months old. My mom left me behind with my aunt and my grandmother. Two sick kids here.
Jesus.
And then all her youth was just spent going back and from America to Pakistan to get her two sick children.
Got like a little Kamala Harris's.
Got a little Kamala Harris's, yeah, for sure. I mean, but I think Kamala probably had a little bit more of a stable background than I did. But my mom.
Her mom was what, 21?
And
her dad. And her dad, her dad wasn't with her, so it was just her and two kids. Yeah.
Wow.
And they were going to Cali and back to India.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, my mom like was just going back and back and forth. So my mom is just very she's a very high strung individual.
Yeah.
Very high strung, very narcissistic, and it's hard. It's hard to connect with people like that. It's hard.
Okay. Side note, how do brown people take Kamala's win?
Oh dude, are you kidding? I mean I cried when I like when he won. I cried.
I know Indian Pakistani have beef, but do they come together for their sister making it?
All day.
So everybody came together?
All day. Oh, we all come together. All day.
Like back in Pakistan.
Oh, I don't know about back in Pakistan. I haven't been to Pakistan.
Still talk to people there? You don't talk to cousins there or family there or anything?
A little bit. My cousins are like, the interesting thing is that once we came to America, then all the other cousins started traveling all over. So it's, one lives in London, one lives in Australia, one lives in Dubai.
Overall, the community is like super proud.
Overall, the community. I mean, the community that I know here is super proud. I don't know what it's like in Pakistan. I'm sure they're like, dude, you know, fellow brown person is up there.
Yeah, you think it'll be a lot more brown and black relationships now because.
Hey, haven't you heard of the Blindian Project, Rel?
The what?
The Blindian Project.
No, I've never heard of that.
It is an Instagram account. I highly recommend you follow it. It is all about brown girls getting married to black dudes and vice versa.
I never heard of that. The Blindian?
Blindian Project. Yeah, they bring me on to interview me a few times. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
What the hell is this?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. A lot of interracial Indian, Pakistani, black babies being born. Lots.
And what city is this happening in?
It's happening all over.
Nice.
Blindian Project is the jam, dude. I love the guy who runs it. He's a super cool dude. I adore him to pieces. He's great. So they post these amazing stories.
My ex was Indian. Well, she was from Guyana.
Oh wow.
So I got a little bit of information.
And how did you bring her around to your family? How did that go down?
Yeah, she met my mom and my dad. She's from DC, Maryland, but she was Guyanese. But yeah.
What happened, bro?
You know, she's in DC, I'm in LA, you know.
Move her out here.
That's a whole other. We could be a 6-hour podcast.
This is gonna be some Rogan ass podcast right here.
Yeah, so I dibble dabbled in your community a little bit.
I see. But you know, also with Guyanese also have other blood mixed in them too.
Yeah, but she was more pure. She was actual. They weren't really. She was strictly India, go to Guyana.
Oh wow!
Her part of the family that immigrated didn't mix as much. So.
Wow, Andre said. So you've been in a Blindian relationship, brother. Welcome to the club.
Yay! What kind of roti do I get? Like, in Jamaican, or do I get any? Yeah.
But wait, did you go and meet her family? Like, what was that like?
I knew her family. I grew up with I grew up with her cousins, so I knew her family, but I never met her. So we ended up meeting a little bit later. Yeah.
Oh, look at that. Andre's actually inviting you. They're saying, I officially extend an invitation to Urel to come on and chat with us at the Blindian Project. Oh,
I'm down. Share my experience.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Urel, you got this amazing show in development with NBC called Uncivil. Can you talk about a little bit about the concept of the show and what it's about?
Yeah, it's... You know Partis at all?
I met him once. I met him once at the improv in passing. I know he's Sri Lankan.
Yeah, so pretty much he's Sri Lankan and Iranian. So pretty much a black and Middle Eastern guy who grew up as best friends and competitors from science fair to making the football team, basketball team, to girls, whatever, end up competing in the court of law. So one is a defense attorney, one is a prosecutor. And they have to compete in the court. So their home life competition as roommates bleed into their work life as dueling lawyers. And just the issues of African-Americans and Muslim and Middle Eastern Americans kind of, you know, battling at home, also battles in the courtroom at the same time, working for two different sides. So just kind of mixing that old school kind of odd couple feel with, you know, issues of today of pretty much black and brown people. So
I like it. I like it a lot. I mean, I'm sure. And you guys, but you guys are you in pre-production? I mean, all the shooting is shut down, right?
Oh, yeah. We still got it. You sell. What happens? We sold the show. Now we still got to develop the script and stuff. So we're on like second base. Like we hit and we're on first base. So it's still a process. Yeah.
Got it. Man, I'm very excited. Have you been doing like other like online shows and stuff? Like a lot of comics have been. What has been your thing?
Yeah, man. Sammy OB. You familiar with Sammy?
Yeah, of course. I did Sammy's show. The KO comic?
Yeah, KO. I do Sammy's show often. There's a couple of live shows out there, you know, like rooftop shows and around the city. I've done a lot of parking lot shows. So I got a couple of shows next week. So I've been pretty active stand up wise. Safe though, socially safe.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it for a minute, yeah.
Well, what is it for you? Like, we're gonna start wrapping up, but what is success to you?
You know, success for me is just not having to work. You know, success is truly fulfilling my art form at the highest level. and being paid a tremendous amount for it. You know, I think money represents money in your art form represents success. So,
right.
Denzel Washington is the best actor. He should get $20 million a movie. You know what I'm saying?
100%. So
being able to be super comfortable with what I love to do and not have to force anything. Am I truly going to reach success? I don't really know. I feel like I'm already somewhat successful, but artistry doesn't stop. You're always growing. You're always learning. So you're never fully there. So, so it's just being successful on chasing that imaginary dragon of pure artists, if that makes sense, you know? I'm doing okay.
Yeah. Apparently, when I was Googling you, which I've never Googled you, we've been friends for a while. I Googled you and it came up Rel Battle net worth. I swear to God, Rel, have you seen this? What your net worth is listed as?
No.
$1.2 million.
Wow.
Is that true?
Would you know? It's that's none of that's real. It's like none of that. All that stuff is real. All that stuff isn't real.
I was gonna hit you up for some. Gonna hit you up, man, for some.
Yeah.
I mean, bills and stuff,
if it was too high or too low,
I was gonna make you some roti, man. I was gonna make you some Pakistani roti, dude.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's options there. If it was too high or too low, I still wouldn't tell you. I don't want to be a target.
I mean, I saw that and I was just like, really, 1.2 million? Okay, all right.
I was told last year it was 1.4, so I must be slipping.
Listen, it's a pandemic, man, but not too shabby. Not too shabby, though, 1.2 million.
Not too shabby at all.
Not too shabby at all. Rel, when would you know that you've, like, made it? I know when I've made it is when I no longer fly commercial. I only fly private.
Oh, word? You know, my mom already retired, so that was a sign for me, you know, to a certain extent, like,
yeah.
You know, you don't have to be a multi-millionaire to make it, but when I'm at the point where I could just when I can just have an idea, spit it, and somebody wants to make it, you know, that's my ultimate goal. I can go to a studio, hey, I want to do this, I pitch it, and they go, all right, let's go, and we go and we start working. So I'm already kind of doing that now. This is my fifth show, but I'm still running through hoops, you know.
I still want to be able.
People just trust. This is going to be good, and we're gonna ride with this kid, man. I think like Aziz is like at that level. You know what I'm saying? I think
Ralph, even guys like Aziz and Kamel and all these guys, even then when you even have that level of success, it still is not a guarantee that you're gonna get that project made. You have probably a lot more weight than somebody coming in new like myself. But there's no guarantee. Like, I mean, fucking Robert De Niro was shopping around a script for like 10 years. And he was already Robert De Niro and he couldn't get it made. It was crazy.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You never really, not saying you're not happy. You never reach that because you're always going to have to keep working. So, but to be a comfortable spot where you know Aziz is going to work forever. It's never going to be, he's never not going to be out the game.
Right.
And the comfort level is kind of, I would love, you know, where
he can't get a woman to save his life, but yeah, you're right. He's gonna
he's always gonna be because he's set in stone to continue to thrive. So
yeah,
I respect him for that.
Yeah. No, that's entirely fair. Well, I feel like this interview was about me than it was about you.
I needed to learn about you. I wanted people to know about your life. So that was good. I'm learning.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. A lot of these folks that tune in here, they know a lot about my life because I talk a lot about my life.
You know what I'm saying? We broke down how arranged marriages work.
We talked about psychology of why you were picking out the women and why I'm picking out the dudes I'm picking out, right?
Right.
That whole subconscious thing.
So this was a joint thing, but I learned a lot and they can see my ignorant ass learn something.
I don't consider that ignorant. I consider like you were curious, you didn't know,
right.
And now you know. You weren't ignorant. The ignorant assholes are the ones at Capitol Hill chanting fucking, stop the steal.
That's a whole other podcast.
We're going to bring you on for like that whole thing.
We can do a whole political one too. So
Bro, we're going to do just that. I'll bring you back on again, man, and we'll do just a strictly political one.
You've always been my homie. You know how it is. You know what it is.
I know. You're my homie, too. Mm-hmm. And, Rel, where can people follow you?
Rel Battle on everything. I'm simple.
Listen, there ain't no other Rel Battle. Let's be real here. Right. It's like there's one Beyonce and there's one Rel Battle.
It's a little rail, so I'm a little bit more successful than me. So
he's little, but he's little though. He's little, Rel.
That's a nice cover. I appreciate that.
He's little though. Rel, always a pleasure, my friend. I hope to talk to you soon.
We will. Be safe, all right? Thank you.
My friend. Take care. Bye. That was a lovely Rel Battle. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Andre asked me, how can we follow Rel? You can follow him at relbattle.com, which is B-A-T-T-L-E. RelBattle.com. Mona wants her own plane. I don't. I don't want my own plane. I just want to fly private. That's all I want. And apparently, you know, now with like JetX and you can buy shares in private jets per month where you're just flying private domestically, internationally. It's just, it's a dream. Is it going to come true? I don't know. But I definitely strive for it. I feel like in my head, I always raise the bar so high. And it must be maybe a cultural thing or it's a family thing where it always has to be so freaking high where it's just like, it has to be like this. And maybe it's just, it's a stupid dream. But that's kind of my thing. But whatever. You guys, if you haven't followed me on my YouTube channel, you can follow me at youtube.com/Mona Shake Comedian. You can also follow me on TikTok. I am on TikTok. You guys making out new videos every day at Mona Shake Comedian as well. And also on Twitter and Instagram at Mona's Comedy and Facebook, of course, at Mona Shake Comedian. You guys, stay safe out there. Have a good night. I will see you on Monday. Stay safe. Wear your masks. Wear your condoms, too.